Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me today Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. Good to see you again, Chief.
Happy to be back, Robert, and looks like we have a great show ahead of us.
I would like to talk to you about the water walk that took place recently at a community meeting regarding the efforts by Alderville to get personhood for Rice Lake and the Ganaraska River. Can we start from the beginning? Where did you gather the water and what happened?
Well, we had a very important community meeting on a Saturday, a recent Saturday at the community center. And we were going to have a presentation from the International Observatory of Nature's Rights. So as we were planning that event, I thought it was really important that, you know, water from Rice Lake be in attendance at that meeting. So with that, we came up with the idea of having a water walk the day before, where we would have ceremony down at Vimy Ridge, which is our area on Rice Lake. And we went through ceremony and we had a young lady, as per how water walks go. She drew water from the lake in a copper vessel. And from there, we blessed the water. And from the lake, we walked a couple hours to the community center so that we could put it in place as the guest of honor for the meeting the next day. And at the end of the walk at the community center, we had a showing of the documentary, The Magpie River, I'm the Magpie River, which is the only other body of water that has got legal personhood in Canada at this point.
Can you describe what the walk was like?
Well, we were fortunate enough to have Kathy McLeod Beaver, who is one of our esteemed elders, to do the ceremony. So we relied on her for the knowledge of what we should be doing. And so as we were doing the walk, which was a couple hours, we started off coming up a really large hill. And we thought that everyone was worried about that hill because we were having elders. And we started off with about 20 people. I'm happy to say that at the end, we had 13 people that completed the entire walk. But as, you know, when we were going through some of the hard stretches uphill and we're going a bit slow, Kathy would bring out her drum and she would sing us a song and she would lift our spirits. And it really, we felt the energy that she transferred to us so that we were able to keep on going. When we were first discussing the water walk, I would have been happy if 5 people completed the walk. That's really what I was aiming for. So to see 13 people complete the entire walk was really special to see. So we had youth, we had elders, and we had a good mix of people all together that joined in. And we also had people join in along the way. So when we walked by some people's houses, they joined in on the walk and were able to join us for the rest of the way. So it was really quite a moving experience.
Now, at the community meeting, how many people attended?
We had 36 people in attendance, which for an Alderville community meeting on anything is quite astounding. Oftentimes, we will have an information session or a community update meeting, and you know, we might get like 10 to 15 people. And to us, that's usual. Like, this is what we do. We want to present. We have the online option available as well. So we didn't really have any expectations. But we did have guests coming all the way from Montreal to sit on the panel discussion. So I really was hoping for a good turnout, and we did get that good turnout for this community meeting.
Can you give us a bit more detail about the meeting itself? What was discussed?
Well, we laid out what exactly the Legal Personhood Initiative is. We had Elder Jeff Beaver sitting on the panel, as well as 2 members of the observatory. And we had another member of the observatory who was facilitating it. So we basically laid out what the plan is, what we're trying to accomplish. But really, the meeting was for the community. And if they had any questions, they were able to ask questions at any point. So I think we were able to answer all the questions. We had some really good online questions that came through. So I really feel like that we accomplished our mission. We also had our allies from the Baxter Creek Watershed Alliance join us. So we've been working with them for a couple of years. So it was really nice to see them come up because we need this joint support. It's not just Alderville that's running this initiative. We need all of the allies. We need all of the organizations. We need all the municipalities that are along Rice Lake. So we're still building that alliance, but so far we've got a very strong group of organizations and governments that want to push this through.
Just for listeners who may not be familiar, what is the observatory? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So the International Observatory of Nature Rights was founded by Yeni Cardenas, who is a lawyer originally from Colombia. And she has been a nature's rights lawyer really all across the world. She's got those connections in the United Nations. She helps organize a lot of the climate change conference workshops that happen at the United Nations. So she's a really big international person in this field. So she founded the International Observatory for Nature Rights, and she's put together an amazing team of people that also share the same mandate and vision for the future of our planet. So this is a wonderful organization that's respected all over the world, and we're just pleased that we've joined forces with them.
Another group you mentioned is the Baxter Creek. Can you tell us who they are?
Yes. So just on the north shore of Rice Lake in Peterborough County, there's an organization called the Baxter Creek Watershed Alliance, and they are concerned with protecting the watershed and the headwaters of the watershed in that area. So they reached out to me about almost over 2 years ago, and we've been working together ever since. I've been to one of their annual meetings as their keynote speaker. So from there, we realized we had a lot of similarities and shared mandates. So there's a lot of land protection initiatives that we are engaged with them. So we want to preserve land so that it doesn't get taken over by industry, especially the ones where the headwaters of the Baxter Creek happen.
What's going to be the role of Band Council as this movement goes forward?
Well, Band Council is going to be involved in the way that we need to put in our laws. We need to update our constitution potentially to fundamentally recognize the rights of nature as one of our fundamental tenets of who we are as First Nations people. And this is something that we've always believed in and known. It's just a matter of ingraining that into the constitution. So we're going to need Band Council to go out and research this. We need to convince the membership that this is the way to go, because any change to our constitution has to go to a vote and be ratified by the membership. So our job would be to basically just inform our members of why we're doing this and how important it is. So really, we are depending on the membership and council to help push this through.
Do you have a timeline on that?
We don't. Any changes to the Constitution, we're talking probably a couple of years. We have to have discussions. We have to have several meetings. And it's one of those things where it's the end goal is the goal. So however long it takes to get there, we'll go down that path. Ideally, you know, the quicker the better. But this is one of those longer term goals that we're going to keep on until we achieve that goal or until it gets defeated somehow. But we aren't hoping for that option.
Now that you've had this meeting, what do you see as the role for the community in the future?
Well, I think it's, you know, First Nations people, especially Mississauga, have a unique connection to Rice Lake. So I think we all have stories of growing up as children, are hearing stories from our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents about how much the lake means to us. So in a lot of ways, we've always been the keepers of the lake. I think just continuing that and telling our neighbors and our friends the importance of Rice Lake and why it needs to be protected, talking about how the changes we've seen, how Rice Lake is kind of gone downhill in terms of environmental pollutants and invasive species and loss of indigenous plants and animals, as well as the loss of the rice. But we know now that the rice is coming back, and Rice Lake once again has rice on it.
Anthropomorphism is where you attribute human characteristics to a god or animal or objects, and people often do this with pets like cats and dogs. How do you see water as being a person?
Well, water to us as First Nations, water is life. Water is alive. We see things as, I guess, in terms of anthropomorphism, we do see everything as our relatives. Our plants are our relatives, animals are our relatives, waters are our relatives, mountains. Everything, like, we are all connected. We're all part of the same planet. We all share the same atoms and molecules in our body that have always been here. So whether we agree or not, or like it or not, we are all part of the same ecosystem. So we know that water has properties that science is only just beginning to understand. So we've always seen water as a relative. It's always been the provider of life for us. So this is just a way of formally recognizing it and having it formally recognized throughout Canada.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation the fact that you see yourselves as a community as keepers of Rice Lake. Keepers can advocate, they can lobby, they can do a lot of things to preserve the lake. What's the difference between being a keeper and then attaining this personhood status?
Well, the personhood status is going to add some teeth to the laws that are currently on the books. I believe we talked about this in the past, but it's not that we're making new laws. It's just that the laws that are on the books aren't being enforced. We see that these laws being broken all the time. We see pollutants going into the lake. We see illegal fishing. We see all sorts of things. So right now, it's just a matter of enforcing those laws and having the mechanisms to be able to report or call in something, a misdeed. Like net fishing has been happening on Rice Lake, and that's illegal, but there's no repercussions for those that are doing it. We see lots of illegal fishing throughout the entire year, from the winter, spring, summer, and fall. So these are things we want to cut down on. And we also want to ensure that species at risk laws are upheld. So it's just it's not necessarily bringing in new laws. It's just giving teeth to the laws that are currently on the books.
By giving Rice Lake the right to exist, to flow, to be healthy, and to protect it from pollution, what would change if that were to happen?
Well, I think we would see food sovereignty increase, not only for First Nations, but for everyone who is along the lake. For Indigenous people, Mississauga in this area, there's two First Nations on Rice Lake. There's Hiawatha on the north end, and there's Alderville on the south. We, for thousands of years, have used Rice Lake as our refrigerator, as our grocery store. We've got our fish, we've got our rice, we've got our waterfowl, our muskrats, our beaver, all sorts of food sources came from the lake. And it's only been in the last 100 years or so where that hasn't been the case. Yes, we can still fish. Yes, we can still hunt ducks. But it's not to the same degree that we had in the past. In the past, there was a 9-mile rice field. And this not only fed us, but it fed all the ducks and the geese that we also lived on. So the ecosystem was much more vibrant back then. So we would love to bring that back. And so I think anglers and sports people and hunters are going to really see the benefits from that, because there's just going to be more food sources and healthier food sources than we see now.
In legal terms, how does this go from property to personification? Because that's going to be a massive shift for people in their minds.
Well, I think we always bring back the example that corporations have legal personhood. So you have something like McDonald's or IBM, and under the law, those are people. So if you can wrap your head around that, something that's been happening for decades, then it's not too hard to understand how natural bodies that actually are alive can have legal personhood. So it's one of those things where we're not saying that his name's going to be Frank and we throw birthday parties for him. It's more of an legal protection status for the lake that allows it to have certain abilities that it currently doesn't have.
Well, I appreciate your analogy between corporations and Rice Lake, but it's not quite that simple. I mean, this is a major shift in the way people view something. Corporations are not public entities that we all share in their resource. It's not like it's a simple thing, but it's going to actually change people's worldview.
Again, it gets back to the food sovereignty. When we had COVID, we saw that the supply lines for things like food and commodities were disrupted. And all of a sudden, we were wondering, where's food coming from? How are we going to get it? So this is something that we haven't been food independent for quite some time. But this is will bring that back. This will bring back food sovereignty. And there's so many other good things that will flow out of having a healthy lake. So we are going to have better, cleaner headwaters. There used to be a time when you could drink right out of Rice Lake. You could dip your cup into the lake and you could drink it and you would be fine. You wouldn't worry if you're going to get sick in a couple of hours. So we're trying to bring back the past. This is an act of reconciliation where we are trying to correct those mistakes of the past. And this, I'm not saying legal personhood is the perfect magic silver bullet that's going to fix all of the things that have gone wrong. But it is a tool that is available at this point to get us to where we need to be. There will be a body that represents the lake, and this will be made up of First Nations, municipalities, conservation agencies, angling associations, wildlife conservation agencies. So everyone's going to have a place at the table if they want one to be able to speak for the lake. Because we know the lake can't speak for itself, we would need to form that group to do so.
How are the efforts so far in getting alliances with those organizations?
Well, everyone has been supportive of this that we've reached out to. So there's still more to reach out to, but generally we found the municipalities have expressed their support. Port Hope has passed their resolution of support. We're working on some of the other municipalities to also get that. All seven Williams Treaty First Nations are for it, and all the conservation groups that we've talked to are for it. So we feel like we've already got that that alliance that we need, and we really haven't gotten much pushback. I thought there would be more, but those that have come with concerns after discussing and conversation, they've come around and said, you know, that actually sounds like a good idea. I'm for it.
This is going to take a lot of resources and time. I understand that there was a fundraiser for this purpose on Orange Shirt Day. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So about not even 2 weeks before National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, I got a call from one Tom Jackson, who is an actor and singer. People might know him from North of 60. He's also got another TV show that it's escaping my mind right now with the title of what it is. But he called and he said that he had heard about our initiative. And he was hosting a benefit concert in Port Hope on September 30th, but he was looking for a cause to support. And this was a cause that he was really into. He's been very supportive of water and water protection for decades. It's something that's been one of his passions. So when I told him about our Rice Lake Personhood initiative, he instantly said that this is what he wanted to support. So we were able to work together over the next couple of weeks to put together what that benefit concert would entail at the Capitol Theater in Port Hope.
Besides Tom Jackson, who else performed?
We had a number of singers and dancers and drummers from Alderville to really bring that element of reconciliation and what we're doing. And we definitely wanted to make sure that we weren't doing something of a performative nature. We wanted to ensure that this was reconciliation in action. We are trying to achieve a greater goal here. And what better day to do it than on that National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. So we were able to put everything together. And people are saying that they were really moved by the dancing that we had. We had everyone was in full regalia. So we had jingle dancers as well as Grass Dance, and we had two or three songs that were just very powerful, and you could tell that it was really appreciated by all the members as well as the greater community in Port Hope.
Where was it held?
It was at the Port Hope Capitol Theater.
And how much money was raised?
Well, we don't have the final numbers, but the estimates that came in were over $20,000. And Tom Jackson was gracious enough to pitch in $5,000 of his own funds to support this.
Now, when this event was being promoted, it was to recognize National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. Not much was said about the fundraising aspect of it. Why was that?
Well, I think... I think the concert had been announced, or the benefit had been announced prior to him determining where the funds were going. And I think at the time, people were just so enthralled with Tom Jackson that the fact that we were raising money for legal personhood didn't get quite as much airtime that that we would have liked. But the end result was the amount of funds raised for our initiative.
On Orange Shirt Day, there was a walk on County Road 45 in Alderville. Can you tell us about that?
Yes.
Because I understand it's all related.
Yes, it sure is. So Tom Jackson's concert was the evening of the 30th. And during the day of the 30th, we hosted our annual walk. We changed it up a little bit this year. So we started at the health services building, and we had four stops along the way to the community center, where we had I spoke about the legacy of the stolen children. So along each stop, I talked about the industrial school. I talked about the residential schools. I talked about the 60 scoop and basically how we've gotten to where we are now. A lot of people don't know it, but the very first industrial school in Canada was right in Alderville First Nation. Where our current administration office is the... is where the first industrial school in Canada was, which was the precursor to the residential school system.
Any idea of how many people participated?
We estimated between 300 and 500 people. It was more than we've ever had before. It was nice to return to that full walk down the 45. The OPP were involved, and they were able to detour the traffic around. In the last couple of years, we downplayed it a little bit more out of safety concerns, but this year we wanted to really show what reconciliation was about, and we got more support than we ever had before.
Could you describe the atmosphere of the walk?
Well, I think it was very positive. It was a beautiful day. The weather was very cooperative. If anything, it was too warm, but it was great that everyone had their orange t-shirts on. I was near the front with the bullhorn, so I wasn't privy to a lot of the conversation going on, but people came afterward and said that it was just an incredible, moving experience. We had drummers at the end, singers at the end, and we just really wanted to show to the county what National Day for Truth and Reconciliation was all about.
I'd like to talk to you now about land management, but let's put this in context before we begin. What land rights did Indigenous people have in the past?
Well, in the past, I think most people know that we were entirely governed by the Indian Act and the structures in place by the Indian Act. We had no ability to make any decisions for ourselves or for our people once the Indian Act and the reserve system came in place. So in the past, all land management activities, anything to do with land, went through the Indian agent up to Indian Affairs or whatever department they were calling it at the time. And they made the decisions. Everything had to be approved through a crazy bureaucratic process. So Indigenous First Nations, even the band councils, had almost zero effect on land use and land planning and land management.
Could Indigenous people own property on reserves?
There's two systems available to First Nation reserves in Canada. One is the normal system where the band communally owns all the property, and they come up with their own systems on how land is parceled out. The other system, which Alderville is under, is called the CP system, or the Certificate of Possession system, where you can purchase an area and you get a certificate of possession for that land, which is very similar to fee simple ownership off of reserve, which is where you own title to land. But it's just a different way of doing it. So once you have a certificate of possession for a certain area of land, you can feel free to build your home, knowing that no one's going to take that away from you. So it's not a perfect system, but it's the system that we have.
This is a big difference between what was taking place historically, because before you could not own land. It was all owned by the government. Am I correct in that?
Effectively, yes. So technically, even under the certificate of possession system, we still don't technically own the land fee simple title. We just own the rights to use that land. So there's been many attempts to change that in the past. We seem to be going our own way with it. And Alderville had recently passed its own land code, which means we extricated ourselves from the Indian Act, Indian Affairs system of land management, and we took control of our own land management. So now we've increased our sovereignty through that initiative. It's one of many aspects that we need to still regain control of, but land and land use planning, land management, those are very big tools moving forward.
You were at a conference recently that discussed the creation of land codes. Can you tell us specifically what these are and how they work? Are they like bylaws?
It gives you the ability to make bylaws that are very effective. So you can designate certain areas for zoning purposes. You can effectively make laws, like bylaws for how that land is used. There's a lot of things that you can do that we weren't able to do before. Alderville's currently in the middle of making a land use plan, an LUP, which once that's done, will basically be the framework for land management moving forward. So every First Nation that's already passed their own land code, they become part of the Lands Advisory Board. From there, they create their land use plan. And that's basically the complete devolution of lands management activities from Indian Affairs to the First Nation. So there are a series of steps. Oftentimes it takes like 20 years to do the entire process. But the conference I was at was showing where some of these First Nations that have already done it, the benefits that they've got from it. Some of the First Nations out east, there's one in Sydney, like right pretty much downtown Sydney, Nova Scotia and Cape Breton, where they own franchises. It looks like they're part of the city itself. You might not even know you're entering into reserve territory. It's like revenue in lieu of taxes, basically. So taxes aren't a very popular issue with First Nations, but there's things you can do that are effectively similar to taxes. So when you have a company or corporation moving into the reserve, you can effectively gain revenues that are similar to taxes for the First Nation.
Sounds a lot like an official plan. Is it similar?
It is very similar, yes. So of course, all of this needs to be ratified by the membership. You need to have a good plan. You need to be able to represent that plan and sell the plan to the community. And the community needs to say that we are ready for this change. We want to go ahead and do that. So that's the step we're on right now. Well, that's actually multiple steps. So none of these things happen quickly, unfortunately, but we it's all worth the wait. So we're committed to that end goal.
Can you see how existing housing or businesses or industry will be impacted by all these various changes?
Well, I think in terms of regulations, we're going to be able to put in regulations that we might not have been able to put in the past. But overall, my sense of how we would like to do things is to basically confirm the way Alderville's already doing business. We have some very responsible business owners on reserve. They're in a lot of ways, they're self-policing, they're self-regulating, and we really appreciate that. So we're just sort of trying to create a system that confirms the way we've been doing things. So we don't want to make big changes. We don't want to come in with a heavy hand and say, you guys have to start doing this and that. That's not what we're trying to do. It's something that's, you know, Alderville's doing pretty good right now compared to where we were, you know, in decades past. You see a lot of successful businesses happening now. So I think we don't really want to change that. We do have that entrepreneurial spirit. People don't like people meddling in their affairs too much. Nobody does. So we're not trying to do that at all.
How about protecting the environment? Will these land codes improve environmental protection?
Absolutely. So this is one of the big things of a land use plan and land code. So people can't just go out and destroy the environment. We could say, hey, this is against regulation so-and-so. You need to cease and desist what you're doing right now. So we don't, there's a lot of activities that Alderville would not approve. Like, you know, if we want, for example, like a garbage incinerator, like that's something we would never approve. Or like filling in like whole ponds or something. That's not something that we would approve of. So it's just a way of, you know, making sure that doesn't happen and having the regulatory authority to ensure that doesn't happen.
What were some of the takeaways for you at the Land Management Conference?
I think it was really good to help place where Alderville is in a lot of this. So most First Nations aren't in the Lands Advisory Board. They haven't passed their own land code yet. A lot of them are in the process of doing it. So in that regard, Alderville's ahead of the game. But then we can see the ones that have fully implemented their land use plan that are acting on it and are starting to see the benefits of that. So we see we still have a way to go. So I think overall, seeing where we are in the national movement that's happening towards this. So you can see how far we've come, but you can also see how far we have left to go.
Before we get into our public service announcements, I think you have a quick note for us. I understand you were invited to participate in a session with Strathmore House in Cobourg. What took place?
Well, the Strathmore Home House is something that's been a landmark in Cobourg for quite some time on King Street there. It's gone through several different phases in its life. It was, I guess, like a reformatory home at one point. Then it became the juvenile almost like incarceration place. And then it became, I guess, the home for the displaced in Cobourg for a couple of years. And the documentary that I participated in was about what does home mean? Because Strathmore House was a home, and it was a home to a lot of different people, but in a lot of different ways, some very terrible, some very good. And so when I was talking with the documentary producer, she wanted to know what it was like even before Strathmore was a home. What did the area mean to the First Nations who lived there? So I was able to participate in a way of just giving the historical background of how we lived here in the past, what's what had been happening on the Strathmore property before our home was built, before the settlers came. So then we just recently last week had the premiere presentation of that documentary at the Rainbow Theater in Cobourg.
I guess we now turn to one of the best things I think we do every podcast. It is time for our public service announcements.
Okay, so get ready. In Alderville on October 23rd, we have our drum night, which is open to all Alderville members, and there's no experience required. If you've never drummed before, you're welcome to come out and learn how to drum. You know, we always want men getting on the drum and experiencing the changes that does to you. Also on October 23rd, we have our annual job fair, and that's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the community center. So if you're an Alderville member and you want to attend, or you're looking for a new career, please bring your resume, and hopefully we can help you out there. On October 30th, we have a beading and crafting night, which is open to all members. If you're interested in participating in that, please call Aiden Gourviette. On October 30th as well, there's the food bank is going to be open for the day. If you're interested in getting some food from the food bank, you need to register by October 29th at 9 a.m. And that's open to everybody, not just Alderville members. If you're in the catchment area, you're free to register and get some food at the food bank on the 30th. And on October 26th and 31st, Alderville is hosting community Halloween events. So if you're a member and you want to check out what's happening on October 26th and 31st, check the newsletter or our social media site for more details. So on November 6th, we are having our Veterans Social from 5:30 to 9 p.m. So this is an important event where we honor our veterans. So please feel free to come out to that and show your support for our veterans. On November 9th, Alderville is hosting its annual honoring of veterans, past, present, and future people that are hoping to join the Canadian Forces. This happens at our Cenotaph, and this is open to everybody, any member, any person in the county. This is where we have the honor guards and the legions come out. We usually have the mayors, the MP, MPP are often in attendance. And so this is a big year for us because next year we celebrate the 100th anniversary of the construction of our Cenotaph. And as everyone knows, the Cenotaph is the main landmark in Alderville. So we're celebrating 99 years now, but it'll be 100 years next year. And also on November 15th, we're having our 2025 Christmas show and sale. And that's happening at 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the community center. So this is where you can buy crafts and see the nice wares that people have. So a lot of our crafters will make special Christmas items like ornaments or foods that have a Christmas flair to it. And finally, Alderville is hiring. We currently have 5 positions open. If anyone is interested in joining, we have the archaeological program coordinator position, a daycare cook, a language and cultural family engagement coordinator. We have an OW caseworker, as well as a rental maintenance lead hand. And those are open to everybody. So if you're interested in working for Alderville, please contact us and Human Resources for more information. Thank you.
Chief Tanner Simpson, I want to thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Tanner Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Tanner Simpson.